It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Bros Save America as protests erupt across college campuses. Some fraternity brothers from UNC protect the American flag. A perfect topic for an episode of Off the Rails with Will and Pete. Two, your responses to our conversations this week regarding the fall of Howard Stern, the embarrassment of Joe Biden, the debate over the war in Ukraine, and whether or not black and white are simply superficial, manufactured differences to erase the memory of who we really are. And three, the legend behind God Bless the USA, Lee Greenwood. It is the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News Facebook page, and always on demand by just hitting subscribe at Apple or Spotify, or head on over to YouTube in the text description underneath this live stream. There's a little button. You just hit subscribe to The Will Cain Show. You can catch up on past episodes. You can look and watch past exclusive interviews. You can watch The Will Cain Show shorts by just hitting subscribe. Let's get right into it today. Let's go off the rails with story number one. He is my co-host at Fox and Friends Weekend,
up,
my co-host of Off the Wall, and of course now Off the Rails here on The Will Cain Show. It seems to me that he is sitting somewhere, I don't know, at the Acropolis
the
in Greece
Name
as he joins us here.
It looks like Greece. If you can hear the bells chiming, it's noon here in Charleston, South Carolina, and so all the church bells are ringing throughout the city. It's awesome. Charleston's an awesome city. I've been here before, but haven't really experienced it. But it is right at noon. We are live. You can tell we're live because the church bells are going here in Charleston. It sounds like they're playing a whole hymn. Hopefully they finish up here in a second.
Here's the thing. Is Charleston Zach Bryan, or is Charleston, what's a better example, Florida-Georgia line? Here's what I mean. Is everyone says Charleston is great. Everyone would rank it near the top of their favorite cities, Charleston, South Carolina. In the same way that everybody at one moment loves Zach Bryan, or everyone in one moment loves Florida Georgia Line. My question, though, is Charleston too popular in a way that is unsustainable? Do they have their little boomlet of a moment? And because it gets so popular, everyone rushes in to Charleston. I have the same concern for your new hometown of Nashville. And then in 4 or 5 years, 10 years, because everybody rushed in, it ruins something for the sustainable long term. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Zach Bryan goes incredibly nuclear, but he's going to be around. I think we're going to be listening to Zach Bryan in 20 years. It's quality music that will stand the test of time. Now, the problem is with Charleston, huge culture, lot of history, great city of the South. But I hear way too many people who are outsiders who love Charleston, so much so that it makes me wonder, what do you love about Charleston? And how many of you are going to change Charleston? So, I don't know. Are they Florida Georgia Line, or is Charleston Zach Bryan?
I'm just amazed at how your brain works. We did not script this one bit. He seized on Charleston and took a country music analogy that I don't actually fully understand. All I know is that Charleston's a great city. Okay, it's going to hold up. It's clearly been a great city since, I mean, they were defending it in the Revolution. So this has been, but it still, I think, remains small enough. It's a gem. Like, nothing can be taller than the highest church towers in the city. So there is a limit to the amount of congestion you can have inside the city because of those limitations. So I think it holds. I think it holds nicely. It's got plenty of room for growth if it needs to. But the historic part of it is preserved. I think the culture, I don't know. I don't know what the culture was like 25 years ago vis-a-vis now, but nice people.
But I've told you, I think that Nashville is at its peak. I think it's you could argue that its heyday may have already been in the past, but it is reaching its peak of popularity. I mean, Larry Ellison says they're going to soon move Oracle to Nashville. And I lived, anyone that's ever lived in Austin, I went to the University of Texas for law school. Anyone that's ever lived in Austin has always said, well, you should have seen Austin back in the day. I was there in the 90s and people would say, oh, Austin in the 70s. That's when it was great. And now that I was there in the 90s, I'm sure it's my privilege to say to people that live there now, oh, but you should have seen it in the 90s. That's when it was manageable and not totally full of Californians. So, I do worry about cities like Austin. I do think that Nashville needs to be careful that it doesn't now backslide down the slope of having in this house, we believe love is love and, you know, Ukraine is the savior of democracy signs. And I worry, I mean, Charleston is in that group. You know, it's Charleston. It's a much smaller member of the group, but it's a member of the group that includes Charleston and Nashville. I don't know if you went further west. I think you'd probably make the argument that Boise, Idaho's in the fraternity, you know. But it's in the fraternity of cities that in the past weren't trendy and cool, but are trendy and cool. And when you get too trendy and cool, I worry about your future.
And you worry about things that I just don't worry about. I just enjoy it for what it is. I don't know what it was before, but it seems pretty cool right now. Here's what I'll say. It's harder to get to than Nashville. It's harder to get to than a lot of places. There just aren't as many direct flights. And I think that limits, it's got an itty bitty airport. I think that'll limit the amount of growth that Charleston sees, which is a good thing. You're right. Boom towns go sideways. Nashville sometimes has a little bit of that feel. Still feels great to me. But past its prime, I don't know. Charleston's just delightful. Yeah, that's it.
I'm going to add one more member to the fraternity. I'm just having fun with this. Another member of the fraternity is Bozeman, Montana. Now, I lived in Montana for a year, and back then you would have said Missoula was the cool city. But Bozeman has taken over, I think, as the cool city where a lot of, you know, Californians again are hunters and fishermen and businesses are moving to Bozeman. And I should sort of fill out the bracket of the fraternity. Who are the members of the cool city fraternity? You know, Austin might be the elder statesman. Nashville's like the vice president of the chapter. And, you know, Charleston and Bozeman are on the come up in the fraternity. But I'm going to build out this cool city fraternity. Let's talk about this as we're talking about fraternities. You and I did this morning on Off the Grid on Fox and Friends. Really interesting and cool scene out of North Carolina. So, the college campus protests, P, are really metastasizing. I mean, they're growing, and they are at more and more college campuses across the country. They made their way to the University of North Carolina. And the story goes that a group of frat guys were walking across campus and saw that the American flag had been replaced by the Palestinian flag. That in and of itself, you know, notable and disgusting.
Yeah.
Well, they, I guess, made enough noise that campus administration came out along with campus security and replaced the American flag. And at that point now, they all break out into the national anthem, singing the national anthem. But when campus security leaves, the protesters try to take back down the American flag. Also, by the way, that part of this story, worthy of analysis. But the frat bros protected the flag for the better part of an hour while being pelted by water bottles and, I don't know, rocks and various projectiles. And I think we just learned, like, frat bros, the savior of UNC, the savior of America.
It's true. Well, exactly the kind of guys that Bud Light didn't want. This is the demographic of people that is supposed to sit in the corner and be quiet and not be counted. Certainly way too much privilege, especially when you think about it. Where's the concentric circles of white privilege? It might be a frat boy at in UNC, might be right around the center of that. You know, except what they are, they're just probably good kids who have good parents who love the country and haven't been brainwashed. And they represent, as we said this morning, I'm sure they represent the vast majority of kids at UNC, the vast majority of people in North Carolina. There's a moment where you say, that's it, I'm fed up. I saw it this morning too. I don't know if you saw the press conference with Eric Adams, with the police department, but the mayor of New York today gave one of the most eloquent defenses of the American flag I've heard in a long time. He's like, we put the American flag back up in Colombia because this is America. And my uncle died for that flag. And we love this country. Like, we're at a place where if you can't defend this, if you can't go to your campus administrators and say, in America, pull that garbage flag down and put our flag up, then we really have lost everything. So these frat boys, I think you're right to seize on it. They took what could have been an easy moment to fold and say, hey, this is just kind of how it is. Or might not. And they said, this is it. We're not taking it. And we're the administrators don't care enough, but we do. So we're going to stay. And I think it takes that type of guts every once in a while just to remind these intersectional, whatever pro-Palestinian Hamas lovers that you don't represent what most people think. And you're crazy and you're extreme and you're not welcome. Certainly at the University of North Carolina to raise that flag. And I think that's a great thing.
You know, I said it's worthy of its own analysis that they took down the American flag. I mean, I don't want to be guilty of saying the obvious, because I think that, you know, certainly you and Rachel and I went together. We do understand the obvious point that needs to be made. So, which is this, Pete. I was at breakfast this morning. This is what I do. I like to go to breakfast with my buddies. It's my big social outing. It's what I am left with in life now, breakfast with my friends. And we were talking about this. One of my friends, there's like five or six of us, and one of my friends is Jewish, and he's obviously very passionate about this issue of what's happening. His daughter goes to the University of Texas, and you saw this past weekend on Fox and Friends, I put up a picture he sent me of you know, pretty close to, if not obvious, anti-Semitic signs on campus in Austin. And and we were breaking down, you know, like, who are these protesters, right? And what are they protesting? And I told my friend, the only trouble I have in matching your passion, because you clearly see the anti-Semitism and you focus on the anti-Semitism. And I think that's part of the pie. But I don't think it's the majority of the pie. And he doesn't agree with me. He disagrees with me. And I said, look, I don't think your average lefty college student is masking some deep anti-Semitism. I think there is deep anti-Semitism in many elements of society, but I don't think that makes up 60% of what we're seeing at Columbia. I don't think that makes up, you know, I don't even think it makes up probably 30% what we're seeing at UT Austin or North Carolina. I think there's so many layers to this, right? And you and I broke it down off the wall. Like, there is the organized effort. There's the Student Justice for Palestine, which has money and organization behind it. I think a lot of these kids don't even go to school, by the way. I don't think they're students at Columbia. They're not students at these colleges. So that's another level and element. The big element, and then there's the anti-Semitic element. And the big element, which you and I've discussed, is you're, and I don't mean to be dismissive, but like, I'm going to use the word ignorant instead of dumb, because dumb implies you have a lack of IQ. Ignorant implies you have a lack of education. And that's what we're talking about. Like, I think the vast majority of the average student that joins this stuff is looking for purpose and meaning. He or she is pretty empty in life. They want to have something to attach themselves to that's greater than themselves. And they've been indoctrinated in an education system for 50 years. I know they're not 50 years old. I'm saying this has been a half a century in the making, where ignorance is allowed to fester because enlightenment is seen as, I'm a champion of the oppressed. I am against the oppressor. And it's critical theory. It's a thing. It exists. It's the core of education. And they're taught not to be critical thinkers, but activists. And I think that's what's happening on most of these campuses. And so when I look at the makeup of this, we all go, who are they and what are they for? I think 50 or 60% is the failure of education and the failure of society to provide purpose to kids who are looking for something deeper in life. And by the way, one of my friends, Pete, said, hey, the problem on a superficial level is Jews are white. You know, like that's the issue. And they are very shallow about, well, whites are oppressors, right? And Palestinians have darker skin, so they're the oppressed. And one of my friends was like, well, if, and I know that there are very different ethnicities even within Judaism, but, you know, like if Jews were seen as the racial minority, and they are literally the racial minority, but if they were seen as the racial minority, these college kids wouldn't be protesting against them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's excellent analysis. I think you're right. These are ultimately anti-Christian, anti-Western protests at their core. I know that sounds odd, but anti-Western civilization. And it is the nexus of Christianity and Judaism, their connection, which I think, and then the historic tropes of Jews being the center of power and control are an easy thing for them to latch onto in a life where they're disaffected and disillusioned by their lot in life. It's their religion. I mean, you hear the church bells, like kids like that used to be raised on hymns and given context and given their view of the world and understanding of the world. And now this is their new church. This is their new passion. It's where they find their purpose. You're exactly right. But I also don't think you can underestimate the percentage of Muslim students that are in these groups that have been trained up in Middle Eastern studies institutes and elsewhere to have a pretty extreme view of their own country, of the West, of the state of Israel. I mean, you don't accidentally fly a Hezbollah flag. You don't accidentally fly a Hamas flag. Even the chance that you make, yes, there's a lot of ignorance in that group. There's no doubt about it. But at some level, you have to know it means the death of people, the death of a group of people, which you're chanting for. And so I do think there's this unholy nexus between Islamists and leftists, which we talk about all the time. And I don't know what the exact percentage is. I bet it's different in a lot of different places. In Colombia, you probably have a higher percentage of straight up anti-Semitic viewpoints there because, well, the history of the Middle East is taught quite differently at Colombia than it is in a lot of other places. So it's and left unchecked, these slogans devolve into what is. I think your friend is right. It's not that everything is about anti-Semitism. It's that anti-Semitism becomes kind of the canary in the coal mine. It's sort of the quickest place to identify if someone understands the West or if someone hates the West. And if they really hate the West, a lot of people decide that Israel is the tip of the spear of that hatred, and therefore anti-Semitism comes out of it.
So, and I want to say this, like, and you and I have had discussions and some disagreement on, like, the long-term relationship and the complicated relationship between Israel and the Middle East. And so what I'm saying is that I understand there is a deeper debate to be had. I just don't think these college kids understand it. I don't think they actually, and again, I'm not professing stupidity. I'm professing ignorance.
Because
the videos.
Just, they like, slot them, like you said.
They don't know anything about Gaza.
On the ladder, on the matrix. Where are we? They're bad. I'm good. This is
right.
Where they go. Right. You're exactly right about that.
And I like how you called this an unholy alliance of you know, whatever the Muslim studies wing of these colleges and the left, because, and this takes me back to the obvious point I was alluding to earlier. There's nothing that fits between the values of the American left and Islam. Nothing fits. Like, and that's, again, that's stating the obvious. The only tie that binds those two groups together, to your point, Pete, is a hatred of the West. And this takes us back to the American flag. So to me, that should be a really, like, it's such a symbolic moment that we're replacing the American flag, or we're destroying the American flag, or we're attacking the American flag, that tells you a lot about the core of these protests.
Absolutely right. I mean, the Red-Green Alliance is what it's been called is not a new thing. It's the Marxists and green being the symbol of Islamists are happy to work together to coexist, to defeat us. And then they'll turn on each other if and when that day comes where their success is complete. But they only share a hate for Christians and for the West and for America. That is what they share. That's what they know to be true. Otherwise, if you put them in a room for 10 minutes and have them discuss their actual worldviews, they wouldn't agree on anything, because a fundamentally patriarchal, traditional view of the world in Islamism, and another one has overturned the entire view, rejects the family completely, and wants the state to control everything. I mean, one is the state, the other rejects it. I mean, they're antithetical worldviews united by only one thing. And at this point, because we have been so prosperous and so powerful for so long, you're seeing an even more ramped up attempt to lean into the fractures that we have been self-inflicted, as you pointed out, for 50, 60, 70 years. They see the advantage now. We can't defend ourselves. And our last line of defense, to spring it all, our frat boys at North Carolina that are like, no, at least the flag stays, you know? And so it's heartening to see that there's, you know, these folks are not the majority, but that's not who destroys countries. It's noisy, insistent, pesky, just vigilant minority that cudgels the rest of us into the corner. And it's a good story to see.
That's going to be my last point. You teed me up perfectly for my last point on this UNC story. First of all, I think this detail is important, and I get your point. You're like, if you were looking at the concentric circles, the bullseye of the dartboard on white privilege would be a bunch of frat guys from UNC. But the guy that made this well known, at least on Twitter, his name's Guillermo Estrada. And his parents were immigrants to the United States, and he was raised in a military family. And yeah, he's in a frat at UNC, and he's part of the group of guys that protected the American flag. And I mean, so throw your stereotypes aside. I think you're exactly right, by the way, that they represent the majority. I think you're right, and we could take heart from that. But beyond taking heart, the lesson that we should take, I said this morning to you, is patriotism is probably more common than we appreciate, but bravery is probably more rare than we appreciate. And what these boys did was not just patriotic, but it was brave to do that, to stand up to that crowd, to risk unpopularity, probably to risk the ire of the administration of the college. It was patriotic, but more importantly, it was brave.
I love that. I love that. You know what? Because bravery, I think of the guys I went to the college with, good guys, they're brave guys, I would think, you know, but joining the military isn't the only reflection of bravery. I guess what I'm getting at is these days are going to require all of us in whatever realm of life we're in to be strong and courageous, like listen to Joshua and follow that lead in whatever arena you're in, because they're counting on the cowardice and the almost dismissiveness. Like the other instinct could have been these frat boys saying, oh man, idiots. You know, nobody listens to them.
Walk it's easy to do nothing.
That's easy to do nothing always. And I, so in that sense, like I said, it's really encouraging. And it's the instinct of men to want to stand up and be strong. There's not a lot of instances where that's being portrayed or modeled properly in our society. It's a whole nother deal. But it's good. It's good.
Well, speaking of courage and bravery, I always appreciate your willingness to dive into the shallow end of the pool, swan dive into pronunciations. And that happened on Fox and Friends this weekend. So let's just walk down memory lane just a few days ago on Fox and Friends.
And one of the climate activists accused of smearing paint on the case protecting Degas' famous little dancer sculpture. And Will, you told me I mispronounced the artist's name.
Yeah.
It's Degas.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're so refined over there. Fancy socks. I'll do better next time.
Doing it, Princeton.
Emphasis
on
the
doing it, Princeton.
We don't learn about the finer things. Clearly.
No, you learned to be an activist at Princeton. You didn't learn. Degas. Okay, so here's the thing, Pete. We've got a quiz prepared for you today. I'm not sure technologically how this is going to unfold. I don't know if the guys back in the control room, the Alicia, are going to read the names. Am I to read the names for this quiz?
I can bring it up, Will. Here we go. Yeah. So this is one of the names
right,
we want.
2 days has got you, Pete.
Oh, yeah. I got that.
All right,
that.
Pete, can you see
Wolfgang,
that on your screen?
Wolfgang, yes. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Yeah, that's, I mean, boom.
Perfect.
All right,
perfect. Next. One for one.
That shows how low you think of me.
What about this one,
true.
Pete?
Oh man, it's Frederick Chopin.
You know it. Come on, you just did that. Come on, you know it, right?
I have no idea who that person is. No,
Frederick Chopin.
Who is that person?
He's a composer, right?
He's a composer.
My wife
is very,
right here. My wife,
a very
my wife
famous
is right
one.
Here listening to me say this, she's so embarrassed right now. And by the way, she's a huge fan of Degas. By the way, she has one of the tiny ballerina paintings on her mantle at our house. She's so embarrassed. She's like, how do you not know these things, babe? I'm like, Degas. People don't know this anymore. I didn't go to classical Christian school. I didn't learn any of these things. So I'm reverse engineering.
You're a valedictorian
that I have.
This is a tough one here.
Yeah, weren't you valedictorian?
We didn't learn anything. I was, but I just checked the box, man. Okay, I know this because I do. This is a political one. Friedrich Nietzsche.
No.
Here's the thing on this one, Two Days. I'm not going to punish him.
This one's tough. I've never really known here's how, the thing. How to pronounce I would it. Say, I know it. Nietzsche? Something yeah. like that?
Nietzsche.
I think you can say Nietzsche. I think you sound
You
sound like the guy that must say Porsche. Like, you can say Porsche. And you don't have to say Porsche. In fact, when you say Porsche, I kind of want to punch you. And I'm okay with a dude saying Nietzsche instead of Nietzsche.
That's how I've always said it. I am familiar with that one. I can own that one.
Tough one. This is a
Johann
tough one.
Wolfgang von Goethe? I don't know. Is this Van Gogh?
This is Goethe. Goethe is the last name.
Goethe? Oh.
Mm-hmm. I would have failed that.
I mean,
that's Goethe, that really?
Yeah.
That's how you say that?
That's German, yeah.
V-O-N-G-O-E-T-H. That's Goethe?
Goethe.
Well,
you don't pronounce the T-H.
Goethe? I'd have failed that one with the accent.
We got just two more.
All right, one more.
Two more, okay.
One more. Here we go.
Markel. I don't even want to try. Douche camp?
Very close. That was very, very close.
Douche camp?
What is it for real?
It's Duchamp.
Marcel.
Duchamp. Marcel Duchamp.
Okay, wait.
Never heard of him.
And I asked for a bonus.
Yeah.
I asked for a bonus for you, Pete. Okay, because, I mean, they can't all be, like, fancy composers and artists. I mean, come on. So I asked for a bonus for you. And
Shohei
to give you
Ohtani. Okay, Shohei Ohtani.
Boom, he got it.
Proud of you, bud.
It took me a long time to get that one.
Hey, you watched two pitches blow by on Shohei Ohtani, but that third strike was going to be hit out of the park, and you got it with Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, that's a heck
nice.
Of a game.
Okay. Wow. All right. Speaking of bravery, I want to hit this story with you. West Virginia, a trans shot putter stands ready to win the competition until a bunch of middle school girls in West Virginia say, no, we're not going to compete. That was the story 1 week ago. Pete, and that's another instance of brave young women saying, I'm not going to participate in an injustice. Now, the newest item in this story is those, I believe it is four or five girls, have been suspended from athletic competition, in the state of West Virginia, for refusing to participate against this trans athlete. Now, you saw this because yesterday we were supposed to do this on Fox and Friends, and I fired off a quick email in response with my point of view, which I got chastised by Pete. He said, never, ever send in your point of view ahead of time. It sets a horrible precedent. But I'm so mad at this story because the message is, no, ladies, you must compete against the men. Like, you, if you dare not compete against the men, you don't get to compete at all. You're suspended.
Absolutely. By the way, the reason you don't, producers always want you to send in your POV, your point of view on a subject. The problem is, for Fox and Friends, Will, this is, I've just learned, the topics change all the time, every time. And so you send in a bunch of point of view on a topic, and it's just the frustration isn't worth it. So that's why. It's my formal protest. This is an amazing story because it's the kids that show the courage and then the adults that are the cowards. And again, just like North Carolina, this is not Portland or Columbia. This is West freaking Virginia. Okay. This is not, you know, this shows you public institutions how much they bend the knee to priorities from elsewhere. This doesn't reflect the values of West Virginia. This reflects the values of, I don't know, the athletic association of that has a national association, or the teachers unions, whatever entity is pulling strings here, the Department of Education, has a very different worldview than the folks in West Virginia. My understanding is these are 12 or 13 year olds. I think these are young girls. They went up to the, it's not like they held signs and said, you know, you're evil because you're transgender. They simply walked up and set the ball down and registered a no throw. And that's how they exercised their protest on the athletic field, which means they were disqualified or came in last. They could do that for any number of reasons. So the fact that, I don't know, it's you said it right. It means you, young ladies, not only do you not, you are forced to compete against men. And this is the view that we have and what we believe.
Insanity.
Also, it's I don't know, it's the logical extent of what they want. That's what I feel.
Insanity. This makes me so mad. Like, we will tolerate kids tearing apart campuses. That's happened on Columbia with Hamilton Hall breaking windows. By the way, did you see those kids at Columbia? They took over Hamilton Hall and then were very aggrieved. They weren't provided food and water. And they got their buzzwords down, man. They're like, we're just asking for basic humanitarian aid.
Idiots. Idiots.
But you'll tolerate that. You'll tolerate that, but you won't tolerate a bunch of 12-year-old girls going, I'm not going to participate against the dudes. No, young ladies, you will or you will not participate at all. You'll be throwing no shot put unless you lose to this dude. It's beyond insane.
Yeah, and they lost by a lot, by the way. Apparently right. Won by 3 or 4 feet, which is huge in shot putting. So I'm told. I don't know a whole lot about shot.
I've never even held. Me neither. I've never held one. You know, what do you call it? A ball? What is it called? Yeah. A shot? Is it called a shot put? What is the object called that you hold? Stone?
I think it's a shot put. I don't know that there's a name for the ball. Yeah,
Are they
throw
heavy?
The shot put.
What does one weigh?
They're pretty heavy.
I wonder what. I feel like they're a shot.
I'm gonna go with 5 pounds.
I have some answers here if you want. It's called the shot.
I was going to go 20 pounds two a days.
It's called the shot. 16 pounds for men, 8.8 pounds for women.
8.8 pounds for women. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm about totally to take a 15-pound dumbbell to the backyard in just a minute. I'm going to take, I have to know, how far can I throw this 15-pound dumbbell?
Not far.
Hey, before we go, have you had a chance? I didn't tell you I might be interested in this, but right before we came on air, I got done reading Donald Trump's interview with Time Magazine. It's a Q&A format, which is nice. That means it's somewhat, you would assume, unedited and unfiltered. Have you had a chance to read that yet, Pete?
I have not. I think your team intentionally did not send me the topics for today's Off the Rails so that it was extra off the rails and so that I didn't have a chance to work on my pronunciation.
Well, you should read this, by the way. It's really good. And it's interesting. I don't know. You just come away with, look, you know what Trump in the end is? He's a pragmatist. Again, we know these things. He's a deal maker. And like, they go through abortion. They go through Israel. He doesn't have the friendliest things to say about Netanyahu. He talks about Ukraine. He talks about, you know, where he is on a national abortion ban. I mean, he just talks about what a second term would look like. And I don't know. I just found it really fascinating. And the obvious point to make is in no world would and in no world has Joe Biden done something like this. Like, whatever it was, 45-minute interview with a reporter, ask me whatever you want, let's go. It's really something.
Completely
Trump
incapable.
In time.
And we've said this before too, Will, but Donald Trump is actually a really moderate guy. And the problem is they've opened the door on the right side of the aisle for after Donald Trump. A far more ideologically conservative, type of candidate than even Donald Trump. It's amazing how much they've whipped themselves into a fervor over someone who really is, as you said, mostly a practical businessman who's willing to look at both sides and take a pretty balanced approach.
All right, last thing, another real quick trip down memory lane before we go from just a few days ago on Fox and Friends. Watch.
All right, by the way, The Will Cain Show, which streams at 12 Eastern time at foxnews.com, the Fox YouTube, and the Fox Facebook. That's what I've got coming up this week. Douglas Murray. Rebecca Heinrichs did not like my interview with David Sachs last week on the war in Ukraine, so she's welcome to come on and have the debate. Lee Greenwood, nerd Roddick of YouTube fame, and there's one guy's face that didn't make it.
How come I didn't
I don't know. I didn't make the graphic.
You didn't make your – so your team thinks I don't help.
No, this team. My team sent it in. This team.
Fox and Friends thought putting Pete on the graphic will not help people watch the Will Cain
show. Correct. Yeah.
Wow. I need to speak to management.
So Pete will be there too.
Okay.
So wait, hold on.
I think it's definitely
you sent
not the
in the list of all your guests. I was on the list of the guests that you sent to Fox and Friends Weekend, and they make the graphic. First of all, that troubles me a little bit. Why are you outsourcing the promo of your show to another show? That seems a little odd. Your team should be working harder. I don't know what they do. Why can't your team make the graphic and then give it to Fox and Friends based on what you think is best for the show? Obviously, then I think I would have made the
way
promo.
Beyond.
It's our own show, and they won't even put me in the promo. I don't know what to think of this. I'm confused.
First of all, us making graphics, that's way beyond the production budget of the Will Cain show. Like, way beyond our staff capabilities, and nothing with the guys. The guys do great, but they have 100 people on staff at Fox and Friends. This is four of us dudes putting together a show on a daily basis. And I was told that they bolded the big names, my guys, and they bolded your name. And Fox and Friends then intentionally left out Off the Rails with Will and Pete.
Interesting.
That's what I was told. That's the conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. You think that was the graph? We got to figure out who made the graphic and who told them to. This is going to be, this is like cocaine in the White House level. This weekend, I'm going to find out.
Yeah, that means it's never going to be solved.
Yeah, it won't be solved. It'll be a bunch of finger pointing. It was supposed to be on the graphic. I don't know what happened. But, you know, Lee Greenwood, if you're going to get passed by somebody.
But in the end, just like we know, in the end, even though we know whose coke it was, in the White House, we know in Fox and Friends, it's Brian as well. Like, we can do the investigation. We'll come up with nothing. But in the end, our gut all tells us it was Brian Kilmeade.
Yep. Always. They had a Lee Greenwood.
All right. That's another great episode. The best episode of every 2 weeks, Off the Rails with Will and Pete. I will pass along your best wishes in just moments to Lee Greenwood. Thank you, Pete Hegseth.
Thank you, brother. You got it.
All right. He is coming up in just a moment. The legend behind God Bless the USA, plus your feedback on multiple debates and shows we've had this week. We always want to be interactive with the audience on YouTube, on email, on X of the Will Cain Show. So we bring you in just a moment here next on the Will Cain Show.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Coming up just moments here on the Will Cain Show, Lee Greenwood, obviously the legend behind God Bless the USA, is going to join us on the Will Cain Show, streaming live at FoxNews.com, the Fox News YouTube channel, and the Fox News Facebook page. And always on demand, Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube. A lot of feedback from you over the past couple of days on various interview subjects, guests, debates, and monologues I've had. I wanted to read through some of what you've had to say. First of all, dating back to Monday, we talked about the absolute embarrassment that was the interview by Joe Biden by Howard Stern. Nancy Roberts Selzy says, there was a time Stern was entertaining. He lost that about 14 years ago. She said that on Instagram. I listened to Stern pretty religiously when I used to commute to ESPN up to Connecticut from New York. And I'm going to say that now was 6-7 years ago. And I really liked him. Great interviewer. Long past his rebel stage, for any longtime listener of Howard Stern, you know, one of the interesting things they say is when he went from terrestrial radio to SiriusXM satellite radio, he lost the guardrails. In order to be perceived as a rebel, there has to be a perceived guardrail. And so he's always pushing back on FCC guidelines, and that makes him seem like more of a rebel. Goes over to Sirius, and you can use the F word, you can say whatever you want. It's like, it's not scandalous anymore. There's no rule that you're breaking. But more than that, he started to just get co-opted by celebrity elite. I mean, next thing you know, he's a great interviewer. He truly is. And I'll tell you, there's two reasons why. Well, three. One, he's conversational, constantly conversational. Two, he's naturally curious. It's just part of it. He listens. He's curious. And three, this is what I personally appreciate because I think I have the same affliction or quality, conversational OCD. He doesn't forget a string in the conversation. So if you're talking about something over here, you can indulge a complete tangent over there, wring every ounce of curiosity out of that, and not forget you got to get back to the string over here. Otherwise, you leave the audience wanting. He's really, really good at that. But he's been co-opted by wanting to be accepted by Hillary Clinton, protecting himself from germs, and slobbering all over Joe Biden. Lori Larimer on Instagram said he used to be mostly funny in the old days. It's as if he's morphed into one of the people that he used to make fun of. Exactly. He's morphed into one of the people that he used to make fun of. Regarding our conversation just now, off the rails with Pete Hegseth, Bridget Johnson on Facebook says, many are not students, but are organizers, and maybe some are grad students. I'd be curious what the percentage would be. Like, if we really took a demographic survey or a census of the protest, what percentage are actually students at the university? I'm going to put the over-under at 60%. I mean, maybe 50-50. Alexis McAdams, reporter for Fox News, is doing a tremendous job. I watched her last night on Jesse Waters, and she is doing a tremendous job, like walking through the protest, interacting with people. It's not easy to do, to be casual and natural and stick a microphone in somebody's face, take rejection. And I think she said last night, outside campus, much more, but roughly 50-50. Dane Cap says on YouTube, couldn't pick a better time for the left to eat itself when this year is an election. And finally, James Kennedy says, ask Pete what product he uses for his hair. Okay, I don't know the answer to that, so I will have to. I noticed during the week, he goes with a pretty slick down, slick back look, and then they get a hold of him and me with a blow dryer by the time we get to the weekend. So I'll have to ask him what he's doing during the week when he's coming to us live from Charleston to slick back the hair. So always looking to interact with you, whether or not you're on Facebook, on X, on YouTube, or on Instagram. We read your comments. We want to bring you into the show, so you're always available to be right here on The Will Cain Show. All right, coming up in just moments, it's the 40th anniversary of God Bless the USA. So coming up in just a minute, we have the legendary singer of that American anthem, Lee Greenwood. That's coming up on The Will Cain Show. Hey, here's a few mind-blowing stats for you. Let me give you three to remember. All right, number one, government debt. It's growing at a rate of $1 trillion every 100 days. Number two, since 2020, every dollar in your wallet has lost 24% of its purchasing power. 24%. And number three, in just 18 months, the cost of groceries and basic necessities for a family of four has gone up an average of $11,000 a year. You lost 24% of your purchasing power. You spent $11,000 more a year on basic necessities. And the debt is growing at $1 trillion every 100 days. Outrageous. I don't care who you are. So what are you going to do? How do you protect your savings with those three staggering statistics in mind? Well, I bought gold, which, by the way, hit record highs. It's expected to hit $3,200 an ounce this year. And who better to work with than Lear Capital, the leader in precious metals investing. I encourage everyone, call Lear, 800-920-8388. Get their free $3,200 gold report. They've got 25 years of experience, countless five-star reviews, and listen to this, 24 hours risk-free purchase guarantee. All that speaks volumes to their credibility. Ask for their free $3,200 gold report and see if you qualify for up to $15,000 in bonus gold. Here's how. Call 800-920-8388. That's 800-920-8388. If you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook, the number is at the bottom of your screen. If you're listening to us, it's 800-920-8388 or go to Lear, W-I-L-L, LearWill.com. Lee Greenwood, coming up on The Will Cain Show. It's the 40th anniversary of God Bless the USA. So what better way to celebrate than hanging out with Lee Greenwood here on The Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com on the Fox News YouTube channel. Always on demand on Apple or Spotify if you prefer to listen to The Will Cain Show, or if you want to watch at your leisure on your own schedule, subscribe to Will Cain Show on YouTube. There's a link underneath the text description of this show. Also, you go to YouTube, youtube.com/@Will Cain Show. As I said, 40th anniversary of God Bless the USA. So story number three, Lee Greenwood. He is the legend behind the song. And he joins us now on the Will Cain Show. What's up, Lee?
Hey, you know, I heard you talking about slicking your hair back, and made me start thinking maybe I should do that. I don't have as much hair though, but I'm trying to slick it back.
You've got it nice and tight there, Lee. Right between two gold albums, I see, by the way, behind you. I'm assuming those are gold, and my color correction is right. Let's just start. Hey, can we start here? Like, that song comes to you. How did that song become part of your life, Lee?
You know, in the early days, Will, I was when I joined MCA Records in Nashville, I immediately went on the road. And I think that's what they wanted. I co-signed with MCA Music as well. They wanted a touring artist. They could cross-collateralize writing along with recording. And so I was doing 300 days a year on the road. It was interesting that for the first time, I got to see all of America. I'm born in California, raised there. I spent 20 years in Nevada, pretty much an isolated dome for many years. And when I started touring America, I saw all parts of it. I saw all breeds of Americans from coast to coast. And it gave me a little bit more insight about who we are as an American. And because my father served in the Navy for 4 years and a merchant marine for 2 years right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, I have respect for the military, of course. But when I got to the point where I kind of was listening to what people were saying, I hadn't heard anybody say for a long time, I'm really proud to be an American. And I'm like, okay, well, what is an American? And I saw, you know, New Yorkers and Texans and Floridians and people from Oregon and New Mexico and Wisconsin. I was like, no, wait, we're all Americans, you know? So I should say, we need to be proud of who we are. And of course, I'm a Christian, so I put God first in this song that I wrote in the back of my bus one night after touring through Texas and Arkansas, I don't know, somewhere in the South. And I had a piano in the back of my bus, and I just sat down and started writing it. And I brought it to my producer, Jerry Crutchfield.
Really?
God bless him. He's gone now. And we recorded it. And then that was the history.
So you wrote it in one night?
Yeah.
One night, piano, back of the bus. I'm curious, like, when you took it to the record company, was everybody all in right away? I mean, the sentiment, the message, everyone was like, yeah, that's great. And I asked that, Lee, because I'd also be curious how, you know, Nashville, or if it weren't a country music song, you know, LA, would respond to the same song today.
That's a great question, and I got a good answer for you. We were recording in Nashville as a separate profit center of MCA, owned by Universal. And it was Reba McEntire, George Strait, the Oak Ridge Boys, Barbara Mendrell, and myself. And we toured like crazy people. But we had to get home enough that we could record two albums a year. That's 12 songs twice. So we went through an awful lot of music, but trying to keep it country. And I had my own brand of country. I mean, I'm West Coast. My background's probably rhythm and blues and jazz, unlike a lot of people who maybe recorded in Nashville. So the kind of music was our brand of country, if you will. When it came to that album, You've Got a Good Love Coming, in 1985, we'd already filmed a video. And my producer and I had very candid conversations about what my theme of songs that we release would be. And I'm kind of a crooner, you know, I love the ballads. We have a lot of ballads like Kenny Rogers did and Ronnie Millsap and a few others. When we came to God Bless USA, a patriotic anthem, he said, if you want to do this, we'll do this. But I think we need to get Universal behind us. So for the very first time, after six albums, we flew to Los Angeles and let the company make that decision, what would be the single. And so it was Irving Azoff, who ran Universal, and he's a member of the Hall of Fame, by the way, who said, I want God Bless USA to be the single. You could have knocked me down, because that was the only one I wrote on that album. And I'm like, I'm not pushing for my own music just because of publishing, but I was pleased that he called the single. So it got a little legs, you know. It was like number 11 on the charts during that year. It didn't go all the way, But it was a slow burn. And then, of course, you know what happens is like the public makes a choice and says, that's what we want. And that's what happened.
So I know your answer. I already know how you're going to answer this. At least I think I know how you're going to answer this. But I want to ask you the same question that I asked. I had the privilege of interviewing Charlie Daniels. And I asked Charlie this question because I think I read, I'm trying to remember who I read, which artist it was. I can't remember which artist it was and what song he had that was far and away, you know, his biggest song. Not that he didn't have bigger, not that you don't have other big ones. I remember being at one of my buddy's houses when I was little, and he had an older sister, and she would play Friends Are Friends Forever. I mean, so loud. I couldn't help but learn the words and all that. So here's the question. Wait, one more anecdote. I saw Waylon Jennings at the House of Blues in Los Angeles. I'm a big Waylon fan, right? And everybody wants him to sing Luke and Bach, Texas, right? He's got a ton of hits, and he was drinking in those days, and he had a glass of whiskey, and he walked over the microphone, and he said, I'm going to tell y'all a secret. I hate that blanking song. And so I asked Charlie Daniels, how do you feel about Devil Went Down to Georgia? It's been a big part of your success, but here's what I heard Waylon say. I read this other artist say, you can get resentful of having to sing this one song over and over. Yours, obviously, is very patriotic and has got deeper meaning than just being a popular song. You ever like, okay, enough of God Bless the USA?
Heck no. I have a friend, Bill Medley, one of the Righteous Brothers, and I saw him one time in Lake Tahoe after they'd had a pretty good run, and he was performing there in the lounge with a band, and the song, I Had the Time of My Life, had just come out, and I loved it. But what a great production. He sang with the duet partner. I can't remember what her name was. And he said, I hate it. I said, Bill, go with it, because this is a career song for you. You may not know it, but the public has already said it's your career song, just like Love and Feeling was with Bobby Hatfield and used in Top Gun later. And so you'll be remembered for a lot of songs, but this is one, it's an earmark, a milestone in your career. Now you ask me about God Bless USA. I never get tired singing it because I know the impact it has for the people who hear it. It's also one of my favorite that I wrote. I mean, I have written many other songs that are my favorites as well. Like I said, I've got an R&B background, and it was several songs that I had written and played on and sang on in my first 10 or 15 albums that kind of identified my career. But I love God Bless the USA. I love to sing it, and I will sing it as long as people want to hear it.
And by the way, that was Charlie's answer as well when it came to Devil Went Down to Georgia. He's like, look, how can you not appreciate something the audience appreciates? And it is how, you know, and I mean, to a lesser extent or not, to a lesser extent when it comes to motivation, you know, becomes mailbox money too, the song, you know, like, but I mean, yours is not just a financial hit. I mean, it has a message to your point that resonates with the audience. And you sing it like to stadiums. I know you've sang it. You know, I'm a big sports fan, and I think we have some footage of you or some pictures of you. I mean, you're at AT&T, you're at stadium after stadium, and you're always there with the military. I mean, the song is more than a hit. That's the point in the end. It's, you know, it's something, it means something to Americans. And I think outside of our official national anthems, you know, you're right there, Lee.
You know, that you mentioned stadiums is interesting because, and I'm going to get to my DVD here, which launches in a couple of days in a second. There, did you see the movie The Gladiator?
Yeah.
Remember when the old gladiator turns to Richard Crowe? Is that his name?
Russell.
Russell. And he says, win the crowd, you win your freedom. When I go on to UT Stadium, which is 110,000 people, and I walk on the field, I get that feeling like the Christians and the Lions. You know, if I make a mistake, they're going to eat me. You know, it's like, and so I'm always thinking about the magnitude of what I'm about to do and how I deliver it to the audience and how that's going to make them feel. So I never forget that. And in this, by the way, as we launch this new DVD, it's called An All-Star Salute for 40 Years of Hits and 40-Year Anniversary of God Bless the USA. I have one in front of me. I don't know if you have this or not, but this is
I see
the All-Star
it.
Salute. It features different singers singing all of my hits for 40 years. And we filmed it. And, awesome. And in this video, by the way, this is the copy. And then we have the Blu-ray copy too here. They're $25 and you can buy one and give it to a veteran. The reason that's important for me is because during the filming of this All-Star Salute, we gave two homes away to Wounded Warriors, and they're still living in those homes now, and it makes me extremely proud. We sell 50,000 of these DVDs, and we will end up building another adapted home for a wounded warrior. That's my initiative now, Will, and not that I'm just pitching the music, but I like the picture on the back of this a lot better. Kind of like that one instead of that one, but whatever.
Well, you know, Lee, I know that about you. I'm not going to pretend like I, you know, that I'm old friends with Lee Greenwood, but I've had the chance to meet you a couple times. And I know that about you, that you know, veterans and giving back is a big part of your career. I want to come back to it in just a moment. Actually, we'll come back to the album because I was talking to you about this in the green room. You mentioned it in passing all those years in Nevada. That story you told me, you used to deal blackjack, right? Was it blackjack?
I dealt 21 and roulette. Yeah.
You dealt 21, you dealt roulette, and you told me you had the last show of the night in Vegas. I told people this story since then because I think it's fascinating. Would you say it was 4:30 a.m. or something like that, your show? And it's actually a popular show because you told me, isn't that when everybody gets off, like everyone who works in Vegas? And I was in Vegas for the Super Bowl with my son. Man, good luck getting breakfast. The time when Vegas is dead is from about 6 a.m. to about noon. There's nothing to be had or done in Vegas, but it's still alive at 4:30 a.m. and you could catch Lee Greenwood.
Yeah, we were at the Sarah Hotel and we had a show called Mod Squad Marmalade, oddly enough. And we would follow, you know, any of the main acts, Louis Prima or some of those, Buddy Hackett or whatever, in the lounge. And our first show was 4 a.m. for 45 minutes. The second show was 5:15 a.m. and I'm done. So two shows a night from 4 to 6, and then go to bed at 6:30 when the sun's up. Or on the other side, before you go to work at 4 a.m., what do you do for the evening? I go see a show. Okay, great. So you're getting like 2 and 3 hours sleep a night. It was the hardest gig I had ever played.
Oh, I bet. All right. Let me put up his album, the All-Star Tribute, again one more time because I want anybody listening on podcast instead of watching on YouTube to know this. It's the All-Star Salute to Lee Greenwood. Listen to the names that are going to be there. Performances by Jamie Johnson, Big and Rich, Gavin DeGraw, Lee Bryce, Michael Ray, Tracy Lawrence, Crystal Gayle. It's an incredible lineup. And again, the DVD, which Lee said, just told us all, it's going to go back to help building a home for veterans. It's the DVD, which he's got right there. He's holding up for you right now. It's the 40th anniversary of God Bless the USA. It goes on sale Friday, this Friday, May 3rd, $25. Right. And by the way, at LeeGreenwood.com. And that's 50,000. That's a new home for a veteran. Awesome stuff you're always doing, Lee. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Lee, we're going to have a little internet trouble there at the very end, a little bit of a tough connection. But I think the audio came through the entire time. His video was expanding, coming in and out. I saw that, and I was like, it's like an accordion of Lee Greenwood. But what an awesome thing to own one of the most legendary songs. I mean, if you were saying there's the national anthem, right, America the Beautiful, and then maybe God Bless the USA, right? It's like from official to unofficial anthems. I think that's a pretty decent Mount Rushmore right there. So check him out at LeeGreenwood.com. All right. Awesome, fun episode, Off the Rails with Pete. Hit subscribe at YouTube, share it with your friends, post it across social media. We appreciate you being part of our community in the comment section. Leave us a review and hang out with us. Just hang out every day here on The Will Cain Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.